Good morning, everyone. We are reading in Book 6, the Book of Fate, Canto 2, The Way of Fate and the Problem of Pain. And we have reached page 447. We have been reading about the sufferings of the avatar. And where exactly did we stop?
The immortal bond we have to go through.
Here, okay. Line 365. The immortal bound to Earth's mortality. You'll start, Manoha?
Immortal bound to Earth's mortality, appearing and perishing on the roads of time, creates God's moment by eternity's beats. He dies that the world may be newborn and live. Even if he escapes the fiercest fires, even if the world breaks not in, a drowning sea, only by heart sacrifice is high heaven earned. We must face the fight, the pan who would conquer her.
Thank you.
And we must become even as he, so we have to learn this also.
First we have to become even as he, and then we might be able to face this. Of course, the immortal is within each of us, but here I think it is speaking about someone who has realized their immortality, but they have incarnated, they are bound to the law of death imposed by matter. That immortal appears and perishes again and again and again. Yuge, no, the avatar comes from age to age, and by his coming He enters the roads of time from his timelessness. He comes. He creates God's moment by eternity's beats. In time, eternity is expressed by the recurring beat of life, of the cycles. In that rhythm, what he is doing whenever he comes, and all the time anyway, he is creating God's moment. Sri Aurobindo has written about the hour of God, but perhaps here this refers to the moment of full revelation. So he has to suffer. Very often he has to pay with his life. He dies that is his sacrifice, so that the world may be newborn and live. And he had spoken about the way that through sympathy, the sorrow of all living things shall come and enter into his consciousness. No? Even if he, it says, even if he escapes that, the fiercest fires of suffering, even if the world doesn't break in on him like a drowning, overwhelming sea, still the work that he has come to do, it can only be earned by hard sacrifice. It's not an easy thing to change the world. So the one who has dedicated himself to that, he who would save the race, he must face the fight. He must face all the pain if he wants to conquer hell, all the forces, the adverse forces and worlds who are constantly trying to obstruct the divine work. And in the next lines, Sri Aurobindo is going to elaborate on what that means, that word hell. Pang is pain.
Sacrifice to me means choice.
Yes, yes.
But what it sounds to me is if the commitment to come here and do this, after that, there is no choice.
No, I think there is choice, but the one who has come, this as his work, he knows that this path of sacrifice, that is of conscious self-giving to the higher powers. We have a rather negative connotation to this word in the West, no? Sacrifice. But with Sri Aurobindo, we always have to go back to the actual meaning of the word, which is to make something sacred. You offer it consciously to the divine. And this is one of the very important parts of the Gita, the meaning of this word sacrifice that Sri Aurobindo has explored in the Synthesis of Yoga. There are some wonderful paragraphs there where he's explained about this. This is the way, the law of sacrifice is the law by which everything is moving forward. Yes, Don?
In the West, you know, now that you mention it there, sacrifice seems to mean that which by my desire, greed, if necessary, wanted, I will give to the Lord. It seems to be the Western meaning of sacrifice.
Well, that would be a good... That would be a good thing to do. Actually, in the West, at least in Christianity, it becomes a rather ritual thing, no? There's the time before Easter, and everybody thinks, oh, now they have to prepare themselves by giving up chocolate and their favorite foods and things like that. I'm not sure of the significance of Ramadan. Maybe it's something similar. But yes, it implies doing without something that really you still very much want to have. So Sri Aurobindo says the essential thing is the inner renunciation, you know, and the offering. And then there's this wonderful first two lines of the Isha Upanishad, where it says, all this is a habitation for the Lord, everything that moves in the universe. By that renounced, thou shouldst enjoy. Tena Tyaktena Munjata. So that is the real renunciation. You renounce it for your egoistic, selfish purposes. You enjoy it for the Lord, or you offer it to the Lord for him to enjoy it. So this is the real way of making things sacred.
When you realize the flame grow up inside,
yes.
But you don't receive immediately, but in action, so it's so much. But repeating.
It can be like that, joyful, but here he's talking about a hard sacrifice that really demands perhaps physical, psychological suffering. Involves that also, because of effort also. What did you want to say? Abraham's sacrifice, yes. He thought that God wants him to kill his own son, no? Yeah. And he was ready to do that. So the Lord accepted his sacrifice and showed him another way. Yeah. Yes.
There are important, most important holidays. The Catholics, they're on Friday, don't eat meat, whatever that means. The Jews in Yom Kippur, the whole day.
Well, I suppose this is a kind of self-discipline by which you express your faith and your devotion to the Lord. And perhaps the religious teachers have recommended this as a way of progress, no? That if you can do this, if you can... But in fact, what happens is that first people feast before Lent, no, they have a big carnival, and then once it's over, they have another big feast. So this is when things are still outward. It's the inner sacrifice, or the inner understanding or movement or intention, which is that really earns something. Ah, it's not a willing thing. It's a kind of rule. Yes.
Actually, the meaning is the Latin roots of the word sacri.
Fice.
I make something sacred.
Sacred, yeah.
So by suffering or whatever I do, I make it sacred. Even killing animals or doing something, not eating meat or whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
I make it sacred.
That's I recognize that it is sacred and I offer it to the Okay. Shall we move on? Yeah, Mihong, you'll read.
Dark conceit, hostility is lodged in the human depths, in the hidden heart of time. They claim the right to change and mar God's work. A secret enmity ambitious the world's march. It leaves a mark on thought and speech and act. It stamps stain and defect on all things done, till it is slain peace is forbidden on earth. There's no visible foe, but the unseen is around us. Forces intangible besiege, touches from
alien
realms, thoughts not our own overtake us and compel the erring heart. Our lives are caught in an ambiguous net.
Thank you. Anything to ask?
Yes. Is this the pain that was first born of the unconscious?
No, I don't think so. This is something else, or it's another. Perhaps it's another aspect of the same thing. That pain is the first beginnings of sensation when life wakes up. in the inconscient. Of course, they're related, but here he's speaking about this experience that we have, that we want to do the right thing, we want to be good, we want to serve the divine, but it seems as if something is always twisting and distorting our human thought, speech, and action. Something's tripping us up. Some force of falsehood is catching hold of us. Yes, Don?
What is it?
What is it?
It, yes. That claims the right to change and mar the secret.
Well, he says it's a dark, concealed hostility. It's a force which is hostile to the divine purpose. So we speak about the hostile beings, the hostile forces, or the adverse forces and beings. No? Here he's not. Narad is not going to explain where they have come from. There are places in the poem where Sri Aurobindo explains or shows us where they have come from. And we read the chapter in The Life Divine, you remember, about the remedy, the origin and remedy of error, falsehood, pain, and I've forgotten now the four things, that they all have the same origin.
So it's these first four powers. I want to see a rogues gallery.
Who's responsible?
Yeah, and these adversary forces.
Yes, but if we really go into what Sri Aurobindo teaches us, you can't quite put it like that. He is responsible.
I do just.
Yes. But you are right. We can maybe remember again Mother's explanation at the very beginning of Savitri, in about Savitri Part 1. So she said that at the time when this manifestation was made, four great powers were deputed to carry out the creation. Consciousness or light. No, truth, life, and bliss. Yes. Consciousness or light. Truth, life, bliss. Yes. And when these emanations were sent, projected by the Supreme Lord, each of them separately felt so powerful that consciously or unconsciously, they cut the connection with the origin. So because they cut the connection with the origin, each of them turned into its opposite. So light turned into unconsciousness. Truth turned into falsehood. Life turned into death. And bliss turned into suffering. And then she tells the story on several occasions and in different ways. In one occasion, she said, when it was seen that now the creation, instead of being a creation of light and truth and life and bliss, it was going to be a terrible, distorted place of suffering and darkness. Then the mother turned to the Lord and said, what is to be done? In one version, she said that now you have to again send powers and keep more control over them, so that they can't cut the connection. So she says, these are the gods. These are the divine powers. But those hostile powers were there first. And in another version of the story, she says, at that moment when she turned to the Lord, then another power was emanated, which was stronger than all the rest. And that is the supreme divine love. And that is the transforming power. And that's what Savitri is about. Yes, Don, you were so eager with your question. Were you listening to what I said?
You were answering the question there, but again, one of the key points is that all that we go through, suffering, pain, etc., is part of experience. That means that the dark forces, whether they like it or not, are also part of experience.
Yes, yes. And they are serving the divine purpose, although they don't mean to, although their intention is quite different. Yes.
It is your understanding that it leaves a mark on thought and speech and act on
a stain, a stamp, yes. Yeah. A distorting, perverting mark. No? Yes. And we feel caught. We are caught in a net. We are not able to avoid these influences with the best intentions. No, they say the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And it's just a proverb. I don't know who was the first one to say it. No.
And he is also standing there as no visible foe.
We don't see these enemies. I remember Amal Kiran telling me about how one day, just standing in front of the ashram in the street, he felt suddenly almost as if knocked over by a dark force that just took hold of him, and he was in such a terrible state. And when he spoke to Mother about it, she said, "We are on a battleground, no? Anything can happen at any moment. So if you in any way put yourself outside my protection, then these things can happen." So those forces are there. And we see the effects of their work in the world. No? And sometimes one can see just precisely how a small distorting word or impulse twists the way things are going, things that were intended to go in a better way. So that is the work. Here he's saying this is the work of the avatar, of the immortal. But he will go on to say that this is the work of all of us, in fact. That we, all of us, are involved in this work of conquering hell.
So we cannot claim our responsibility for falsehood?
No, Shobindo says we can't blame humanity for all this. No, it's not like in the biblical story that Adam ate the apple and Eve ate the apple, and therefore all this has gone wrong and the fall has happened. But we are given the power of discrimination and choice to a certain extent. And in that very interesting chapter in The Life Divine, he says that perhaps the reason why these worlds are permitted to exist, why they are there, and why we are faced with this invisible foes and all this, is because from the point of view of our individual evolution and the overall evolution, the choices that we make are very important in our own development and in the development of the whole. So our will may not be as free as we think it is, but still that power of choice that we've been given, that's the characteristic of this stage of evolution, and that is connected with the mission of humanity to conscious collaboration in the evolutionary process.
One talks about that darkness is within us.
Yes.
And then downwards, it says that it
comes from somewhere else.
Some music's also around us.
Yes.
So
he says it's there, it's lodged in us, perhaps because of our evolutionary past, probably. No? Yeah. And then he says it's around us, these foes. And then he speaks about touches from alien realms. There are these other realms which are not this world, which is supposed to evolve towards divinity, the divine life. So those influences and powers from there, they come and do their mischief here. So these are the different ways in which we are caught in this ambiguous net.
So they come from outside within us, or they are...
Well, if you imagine, if they are just outside us, how could they influence us? There must be something in us that responds. But sometimes, I mean in sadhana, sometimes Sri Aurobindo has advised people, don't identify with these things. Don't think that it's you. This is something imposed on you. This is not the truth of yourself. You detach yourself from it. You know, separate yourself. You don't have to accept that it is yourself. Sometimes. Other times it's better to acknowledge, oh, I've made a mistake. Please help me to do better in future. Mm-hmm. Shall we go on? Will you read, Jean-Yves?
An adversary force was vulnerable. Invader of the life of mortal men, it hides from him the strange immortal path. A power came in to bathe the eternal life. A power opposed to the eternal will, diverse the messages of the invisible world, and calls upon words of the cosmic time. The whisper used to build the human heart, it seals up wisdom's eyes, the soul of the God. It is the origin of all suffering. It binds us to calamity and pain. This almost conquer will bring down God's truth. This hidden form lodged in the human race. Man must overcome or miss his higher fate. This is the inner war without escape.
Thank you. Narad is answering this series of questions that Savitri's mother asked. And one of the questions that she asked on page 438, she asks, has some disastrous power marred, spoiled God's work, and he stands helpless to defend or save? So I think we can see these lines which Jean-Yves has just read as a kind of answer to that question. There is a power, but it's not that God is helpless to defend or save. It is that we ourselves have to gain the discrimination and turn to the light and choose the light in order to be free from that power. This is the only way that we can avoid missing our higher fate. Yeah? Come on, Audrey.
I can't articulate this.
You can't articulate it. Okay. Okay, wait till it comes clear what you want to say.
We're being told two things that seem like the opposite. That we must have this to grow and to, you know, and yet this is something that we watch out for and own as ours or see that it is not ours.
But, you know, it's the same with every discipline, no? If you want to be an excellent, I don't know why, tennis player comes to mind, but anybody who wants to exceed in or do well in any discipline will have to present themselves with challenges, and those challenges will come, and they'll have to be overcome if he's to reach his full potential. No? So, in whatever way they come, they help in the soul's growth or the outer growth, in whatever way it is. But at the same time, we can say, this is not what the world is meant to be like. What we want to overcome all these causes of our suffering and our misfortune or whatever, because we believe that a divine life is possible on earth. And to contribute to that, we've agreed, the soul has agreed to pass through this series of challenges. So they seem to be, it's not that they're contradictory, they're just different sides of the same situation. Yes, yeah.
Talking about tennis, you know, every time I serve it, it's the net. And yeah. While the other person plays, and he just...
sends it straight at you.
Yeah, he sends straight at me. So are we given, everybody is given an equal potential when we started our journey?
I think we have very varied potentials in a particular lifetime. In the whole span of our individual development in the manifestation, probably we have unlimited potentials. But in a particular lifetime, we are given a selection. We choose, to a certain extent, we choose
so
a select.
I seem to fall every step of the way, while the other person seems to be just running. So
well, it only seems like that to you.
Yeah. But they're not doing the same mistake I'm doing.
They're different mistakes, man.
Okay.
No, everybody has to face their own challenges.
So they would have faced it a long time ago and learned the lesson, and so they're going.
How to get the ball over the net, you mean?
Right.
Yeah.
They might face other challenges.
Yeah.
We're all in a different stage of evolution in our soul, right?
I don't know.
We're all the one spirit, the one Atman, but that...
But we're all at the moment, we're all more or less at the human level, but that encompasses a tremendous variety of possibilities.
But when people say, oh, you can do anything if you want to, I always think, not really. I mean, I believe in destiny myself, so... I think a person has a line on which they are going. But I think it maybe doesn't matter whether you're a wonderful artist or a beginner, for example. The real thing in sadhana is that we aspire, because mother gave up her art, you know, I mean, she didn't do much art even in her early years, she did a lot. So the transformation was something totally different. So, you know, it was a phenomenon of the resistance of matter. But one thing I remember saying is that she said, a person will always do the wrong thing without education. So that is the point. I mean,
did she really say that?
Yeah. She said that a child will always do the wrong thing without education.
And you have to bring me chapter and verse before I will believe that, Patty.
But this is I wouldn't have made that up. I remember.
No. I think she said something like that. That we do need.
This is an inherent thing. Is this inherent darkness? I think because of those four beings, they fell into their opposites. So we're all stuck with that. Yeah. The fact that we incarnate on the earth.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So we are all facing the inner war without escape. This is clear, yes. Don't digress just now, Patty.
Oh, I wanted to tell you about the movie.
So we've come to the end of this section now, this very moving section where Narad has begun his reply to Savitri's mother about the problem of pain. And I hope we've gleaned something. I think there were four basic points. But now in the next section, he speaks specifically about the world redeemer. He doesn't specifically say that Savitri is a world redeemer, but that's kind of there in the background. And then, in the next section, there comes a kind of warning to those of us who aspire to a higher life. So that's addressed to us who are not just now destined to be world redeemers. So I think we have not read these sections yet. So shall we read the next two or three sections? Three. We'll read three sections till page 456.
Hard is the world redeemer's heavy task. The world itself becomes his adversary. Those he would save are his antagonists. This world is in love with its own ignorance. His darkness turns away from the Savior's light. It gives the cross in payment for the crown. His work is a trickle of splendor in a long march. He sees the long march of time, the little worn. A few are saved, the rest strive on and fail. A sun has passed on earth's night shadows falls. Yes, there are happy ways near to God's sun, but few are they who tread the sunlit path. Only the pure in soul can walk in light. An exit is shown, a road of hard escape from the sorrow and the darkness and the chain. But how shall a few escape who resist the world? A human mass lingers beneath the yoke. Escape, however high, redeems not life. Life that is left behind on a fallen earth. Escape cannot uplift the abundant grace or bring to it victory and the reign of God. A greater power must come, a larger light. Although light grown on earth and night recedes, yet till the evil is slain in its own home, and light invades the world's inconscient gates and perish as the adversary force. He still must labor on, his work half done.
Thank you. Yes, please.
One yet may come armored, invincible. His will immobile meets the mobile hour. The world's blows cannot bend that victor head. Calm and sure are his steps in the growing night. The goal recedes, he hurries not his pace. He turns not to high voices in the night. He asks no aid from the inferior gods. His eyes are fixed on his immutable aim. Man turns aside or chooses easier paths. He keeps to the one high and difficult road that soul can climb to the eternal peaks. The ineffable plants already have felt his tread. He has made heaven and earth his instruments. but the limits fall from him of earth and heaven, their law he transcends but uses as his means. He has seized life's hands, he has mastered his own power. The feints of nature misled not his sight. Inflexible his look towards truth's far end. Fate's deaf resistance cannot break his will. In the dreadful passages, the fatal pass, invulnerable his soul, his heart unslain, he lives through the opposition of earth's powers and nature's abuses and the world's attacks. His spirit's stature, transcending pain and bliss, he fronts evil and good with calm and equal eyes.
Thank you.
You too must battle with a radiant
Sphinx.
And plunged into her long obscurity, he has broken into her inconscient depths that veil themselves even from their own rigor. He has seen God's slumber shape these magic worlds. He has watched the dumb girl fashioning matter's frame, dreaming the dreams of its unknowing sleep, and watched the unconscious force that built the stars. He has learned the inconscient working and its law, its incoherent thoughts and rigid acts. Its hazard waste of impulse and idea, the chaos of its mechanic frequencies, its random calls, its whispers falsely true, misleaders of the hooded listening soul. All things come to its ear, but nothing awaits. All rose from the silence, all goes back to its heart. Its somnolence founded the universe. Its obscure waking makes the world seem vain. Arisen from nothingness and towards nothingness torn, its dark and potent nascence was Earth's start. It is the waste stock from which all was made. Into its deep creation can collapse. Its position clogs the march of the soul. It is the mother of our ignorance. He must call light into its dark abysm, else never can truth conquer matter's sleep, and all earth look into the eyes of God.
Thank you.
All things obscure, his knowledge must relume. All things perverse, his power must unknot. He must pass to the other shore of falsehood's sea. He must enter the world's dark to bring there light. The heart of evil must be bare to his eyes. He must learn its cosmic dark necessity, its right and its dire roots in nature's soil. He must know the thought that moves the demon ant and justifies the titan's erring pride, and the falsehood lurking in earth's crooked dreams. He must enter the eternity of night and know God's darkness as he knows his son. For this he must go down into the pit. For this he must invade the dolorous vast. Imperishable and wise and infinite, he still must travel hell, the world to save.
Thank you. Who's at the back there? Morrigan is there.
Into the eternal light he shall emerge on borders of the meeting of all worlds. There on the verge of nature's sublime steps, the secret of each thing is fulfilled. All contraries feels their long dissistence. Their meet and clasp the eternal opposites. Their bad pain begins a violent fairy joy. Evil turns back to its original good, and sorrow lies upon the beads of bliss. She has learned to weep glad tears of happiness. Her gaze is charged with a wistful ecstasy. Then shall be ended here the law of pain. It shall be made a home of heaven's light. A seer heaven-born shall lodge in human bliss. The super-conscience beam shall touch men's eye, and the truth-conscious world come down to earth, invading matters with his spirit's ray, awaking its silence to immortal thoughts, awaking the dumb heart to the living world. This mortal life shall house eternity's bills, the body's self-taste immortality, then shall the whole redeemer's task to be eaten.
Thank you. Yes. Let me touch.
Till then must life carry its seed of death, and sorrow's flame be heard in the slow night. O mortal, bear this great world's law of pain in thy heart passage through a suffering world. Lean for thy soul's support on heaven's strength. Turn towards high truth. Aspire to love and peace. A little bliss is lent thee from above, a touch divine upon thy human day. Make of thy daily way a pilgrimage, for through small joys and griefs thou movest towards God. Haste not towards Godhead on a dangerous road. Open not thy doorways to a nameless path. Climb not to Godhead by the Titan's road. Against the law he pits his single will. Across its way he throws his pride of might. Heavenward he clambers on the stair of stone, aspiring to live near the deathless sun. He strives with a giant strength to wrest by force from life and nature the immortal's right. He takes by storm the world and faith and heaven. He comes not to the high world maker's seat. He waits not for the outstretched hand of God to raise him out of his mortality. All he would make his own, leave nothing free, stretching his small self to cope with the infinite, obstructing the God's open ways he makes his own estate of the earth's air and light. A monopolist of the world energy, he dominates the life of common men. His pain and others' pain he makes his means. On death and suffering he builds his throne.
Thank you. Nobody else. Oh, Alice is there, yes.
In the hurry and clamor of his acts of might, in a riot and excess of fame and shame,
by his magnitude, hate and violence, by the quaking of the earth, the world beneath his tread, he matches himself against the eternal calm and feels in him the greatness of God. Power is his image of the celestial self. The Titan's heart is a sea of fire and force. He exults in the death of things, in ruin and fall. He feeds his strength with his own and others' pain. In the world's pathos and passion, he takes delight. His pride, his might, call for the struggle and pain. He glories in the sufferings of the flesh and covers the stigmata with the Stoic's name. His eyes, blinded and visionless, stare at the sun. The seeker's sight receding from his heart can find no more the light of eternity. He sees the beyond as an emptiness void of soul and takes his night for a dark infinite. His nature magnifies the unreal's like and sees in naught the role of reality.
The soul reality.
Oh, the soul. The soul reality. He would stamp his single figure on the world, obsess the world's rumors with his single name. His moments center the vast universe. He sees his little self as very God. His little eye has swallowed the whole world. His ego has stretched into infinity.
Thank you.
His mind, a beat in original nothingness, severs his thought on slate of hourless time. He builds on a mighty vacancy of soul, a huge philosophy of nothingness. In him, Nirvana lives and speaks and acts, impossibly creating a universe. An eternal zero is his formless self, his spirit, the void impersonal absolute. Take not that stride, O growing soul of man. Cast not thyself into that night of God. The soul suffering is not eternity's end, or ransomed by sorrow, heaven's demand on life. O mortal, bear, but ask not for the stroke. Too soon will grief and anguish find thee out. Too enormous is that venture for thy will. Only in limits can man's strength be saved. Yet is infinity thy spirit's goal. Its bliss is there behind the world's face of tears. A power is in thee that thou knowest not. Thou art a vessel of the imprisoned spark. It seeks relief from time's envelopment. And while thou shutterst it in, the seal is pain. Bliss is the Godhead's crown, eternal, free, unburdened by life's blind mystery of pain. Pain is the signature of the ignorance, attesting the secret God denied by life. Until life finds him, pain can never end.
Thank you, Ganga Lakshmi. Yeah.
Calm is his self-victory overcoming fate.
Bear.
To show
Thou shalt find
at last the road.
Thy road to bliss. By now you should have got these. Thee, thou, thy. Yeah.
Okay. Bliss is a secret stuff of all that lives. Even pain and grief are garments of world delight. It hides behind the sorrow and they cry,
because thy strength
is a path and not God's rule, because afflicted by the little self, the consciousness.
Thy consciousness
forgets to be divine. As it walks in the vague penumbra of the flesh, and cannot bear the world's tremendous touch.
Thou
criest out and the saint
says
that there is pain, indifference, pain and joy, a triple disguise, a tear of the rest, a rapturous dancer in the ways, withhold from day the body of God bliss, the spirit's front shall make they own with God, the agony shall change to ecstasy, indifference deepen into infinity scars, and joy,
love,
nude on the peaks of the absurd.
That was a real test. Yes. With the English, the illogicality of the English spelling.
Yeah.
You and I should do some little exercises about this.
No? Thank you.
For example, this thou, thou,
yeah.
It is spelt just like you. So naturally you want to pronounce it thou, but it isn't, it's thou. Challenge for the French, no, where everything is so logical.
It is said that the English vowels A, E, I, O, U have five pronunciations each, while French and other languages one pronunciation each. And that's the terrible dilemma of...
Well, it's certainly complicated, and I don't know what to say except to apologize for the English language. But on the other hand, it has many glories for which we can forgive these problems. So I'm going to read on. I think it would be nice to finish Narad's answer. O mortal who complainst of death and fate, accuse none of the harms thyself hast called. This troubled world thou hast chosen for thy home. Thou art thyself the author of thy pain. Once in the immortal boundlessness of self, in a vast of truth and consciousness and light, the soul looked out from its felicity. It felt the spirit's interminable bliss. It knew itself deathless, timeless, spaceless, one. It saw the eternal, lived in the infinite. Then, curious of a shadow thrown by truth, it strained towards some otherness of self. It was drawn to an unknown face, peering through night. It sensed a negative infinity, a void supernal whose immense excess, imitating God and everlasting time, offered a ground for nature's adverse birth and matter's rigid, hard unconsciousness, harboring the brilliance of a transient soul that lights up birth and death and ignorant life. A mind arose that stared at nothingness, till figures formed of what could never be. It housed the contrary of all that is, and naught appeared as being's huge sealed cause, its dumb support in a blank infinite, in whose abysm spirit must disappear. A darkened nature lived and held the seed of spirit hidden and feigning not to be. Eternal consciousness became a freak of an unsouled, almighty inconscient, and breathed no more as spirit's native air. Bliss was an incident of a mortal hour, a stranger in the insentient universe. You can go on.
As one drawn by the grandeur of the void, the soul attracted leaped to the abyss. It longed for the adventure of the ignorance and the marvel and surprise of the unknown and the endless possibility that lurked in the womb of chaos and in nothing's scarf, or looked from the unfathomed eyes of chance. It tired of its unchanging happiness. It turned away from immortality. It was drawn to Hubbard's call and danger's charm. It yearned to the pathos of grief, the drama of pain, perdition's peril, the wounded bared escape, the meaning of ruin and its glamour and care and crash, the savior of pity and the gamble of love and passion and the ambiguous face of fate.
Thank you, Jocelyn.
And labor and difficult toil and battle on extinction's federal verge, the plant of faucet, the vast incertitude, the joy of creation out of nothingness, stands written on the road of appearance and the companionship of half known souls. Of a soldier in greatness and lowering force, of a separate being conquering in appearance, holding from its two safe eternity. A huge isn't begun, a giant fall. For what the spirit sees, creates a proof. For what the soul imagines, may work. The thoughts that creep from the timeless can become the behavior of cosmic consequence and the interior grip of the gulf, the psychic movement in eternal time. Those skins, born from a blind, tremendous chance, this great perplex and discontented world, this world of ignorance, this world of hunger, where our huge desire stands, grief at quarter, the vast disguise, concern.
Thank you. Wow. So we spoke about Mother's story of the creation. This is a different way of looking at it. So we can go back to... We can go back to page 448 at the break. Patricia?
Why is the world redeeming us heavy task? The world itself becomes his adversary. Those he would save are his antagonists. This world is in love with its own ignorance. Its darkness turns away from the Savior light. It gives the cross in payment for the crown. His work is a trickle of splendor in a long night. He sees the long march of time, the little blind. A few are saved, the rest strive on and fail. A sun has passed. On earth, night's shadow falls.
Thank you. These are very poignant lines when we think that this is what Sri Aurobindo saw. That whatever efforts he might make, all the opposition is still there. Few are saved. The rest strive on and fail. A sun has passed. On earth, night's shadow. There are similar lines on page 7 where he's speaking about Savitri facing the death of Satyavan. All her high hopes, she has come as a world redeemer, and she has this same experience. This mortality, this consciousness which is ruled by death, it meets the sons of God with death and pain. A glory of lightnings traversing the earth scene, their sun thoughts fading, darkened by ignorant minds. Their work betrayed, their good to evil turned, the cross their payment for the crown they gave. Only they leave behind a splendid name. A fire has come and touched men's hearts and gone. A few have caught flame and risen to greater life. Sutanya, you could read, please.
Yes, there are happy boys near to the God's sun, but few are they who trade the sunlit path. Only the pure in soul can walk in light and exist in song. A road of our escape from the sorrow and the darkness and the chain. But how shall a few escape release the world? The human mass lingers beneath the yoke. Escape, however high, redeems not life. Life that is left behind on a fallen earth. escape cannot uplift the ever-knowing grace or being to its victory and the reign of God. A greater power must come, a larger light, although light grows on earth and night deceives. Yet, till the evil is slain in its own home, and while indeed the world's unconscious base and perish as the adversary force, he still must labor on his work of God.
Thank you. Margaret, we can listen to 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Yeah, and then all the way to number 7, a huge descent began. It's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We can look at these lines again next time, but for now we'll listen to Mother reading some lines that we ourselves read today.
He has signed salvation testament with his blood. He has opened the door of his undying peace. How shall he cure the ills he never felt? He carries the suffering world in his own breast. Is the world Redeemer's heavy task. He must enter the eternity of night and know God's darkness as he knows his Son. For this he must go down into the pit. For this, he must invade the Doroswath, imperishable and wise and infinite. He still must travel hell, the world to save. Thank you. not toward Godhead on a dangerous road. Open not thy doorways to nameless power. Climb not to Godhead by the Titan's hold. Against the law he pits his single wheel. Across its way he throws his pride of night. Heavenward he clambers on a stair of stone. Aspiring to live near the deathless sun. Shalt find at last thy hope to bliss. Bliss is the secret stuff of all that lives. Indifference, pain and joy, a triple disguise, a tar of the rapturous dancer in the waves. Withhold from thee the body of God.
Thanks to Sherbindle.